You know what? I've got a beer tonight, and it's a Czech beer, and it's pretty strong. I might be keeping shtum because this is really strong, and I'm not used to it. Hello and welcome to Back to the Mac, episode 8. In this episode, Jacob returns to the podcast with his thoughts on the recent Macworld event. We discuss an important disadvantage of buying from the Mac App Store. OS 10, 10.9 links, perhaps? Getting things done in Mac App Store? Mac Pro near you? Altor option? Or frying pan? Clean my Mac 2? And some expensive heavy solar panel thing makes the hot hardware of the week.
Hello and welcome to Back to the Mac, episode 8, a show about Mac stuff by Mac geeks for Mac geeks. On this week's show, we have Johnny Winter. Say hi, Johnny.
Hi, Johnny.
And Jacob Penderworth.
Hello.
How's things, guys?
Pretty good.
Pretty good for him. He's just been to Macworld.
Yeah, but Johnny was left out. He's just been to England and he's bored with it.
We've actually had some sunshine recently, Jacob. After 4 years of rain, we've actually had...
You say that when I get the clouds.
They're over there, are they?
We've got sideways snow at the minute in the northeast, so it's quite good fun. Should we get back to Mac things? We're going to start this week with a little bit of a recap from last week, following on from our discussion about the pros and cons of the Mac App Store. And there's another disadvantage cropped up.
Yeah, it's interesting, Richard. You know, we had a chat about the Mac App Store last week and about pros and cons as to why you might or might not want to buy your software from there. And in the last week, since we spoke about that, an article on Naked Security, which is the award-winning news, opinion, advice and research site from Sophos, the antivirus people, they've mentioned that the Opera browser has been updated to version 12.13 to address security issues. The Mac App Store is in fact still stuck on version 12.11, which is a full two versions behind. So the Mac App Store is proving to be not very good at keeping software up to date, especially when it needs to address security issues. And the advice of Sophos is, because browsers are a pretty important part of your computer, security is an issue in browsers. They recommend that you just go to the Opera website and download the browser from there and, you know, bypass the Mac App Store altogether. So it's not quite, you know, the place to keep your software up to date. I think Apple made a promise that the App Store will keep track of your apps and tell you when an update is available, and that you'll always have the latest version of every app you own. Well, the first part of that might be true, but the second part seems not to be.
I think it's kind of interesting that you brought up the whole disadvantage of buying from the Mac App Store, because when I was in Macworld, I interviewed the developers of Smile Software, and they do Text Expander and PDF Pen. Mm-hmm. And they were just telling me about how there are a lot of disadvantages for developers for selling on the Mac App Store. And some of them were kind of like, I mean, you don't need it to issue updates nicely. I mean, everything's in the one screen, but you don't have to have that. There's the thing called Sparkle that does it well. And then they were also just telling me that Apple takes a large cut, and it's also not that good for users because of the reviews, for instance. Like some of the reviews can just slate an app, but the app's not that bad, and the developer can't actually moderate the reviews. So
yeah.
I mean, that's been a big problem in the iOS store for their telephone and Fondleslab, you know, with bad reviews on apps. I mean, I've not seen it so bad in the Mac App Store. Maybe that's because we don't have lots of fart apps there. But that's certainly a consideration. And we did address, I mean, that's not an issue we addressed in last week's show, but we certainly did address the issue of Apple taking a 30% cut So, you know, if you buy direct from the developer's website, the developer's going to see closer to 100% of the price you pay.
Is it something to do with sort of Apple's own internal approval for apps and app updates that's making this process slower? I think it can be, as far as I understand, certainly for the iOS store.
It can slow it down. I've heard it takes sometimes up to a week, maybe even more.
I think it can take a lot longer. Speaking with a friend of mine who's an iOS and OS X developer, I mean, he was tweeting just a couple of months ago about just how long it was taking for Apple to get around to reviewing apps that he was submitting. And he creates these apps on behalf of his customers. I think it was, you know, two or three months it was taking at one point. And I think that Paul Haddad of Tweetbot was also talking about this issue a few months ago, the fact that it was taking so long for Apple to approve these things. I mean, they've got a gazillion apps in the iOS store. They've got a few in the Mac App Store. I don't know what sort of resources they put into reviewing and approving these apps. And I'm not entirely clear of what the process is when there's an update to an app. But clearly, it would seem that there aren't enough resources to get these things updated quickly. I don't know whether they fast-track existing apps or not. Perhaps they should if they don't. But certainly there doesn't seem to be, as proved by the Opera issue, two full versions behind now. You know, it's important. I mean, version 12.12 came out on the 18th of December, it says here. So, you know, that's a month and a half, approaching 2 months, just for one version. So I don't know when 12.11 was released, but it's some time ago.
I think it's the whole thing of, if you're a developer and you want to release your app or an update to it, usually you want it done now, and Apple has to do its security checks and all of that to actually make sure that it's okay. So,
I mean, often there's a good reason as a developer that you want to release an update to your app now. In this case, with Opera, it's because there's a security issue. They've identified it, they've resolved it, they push out an update. You know, it's that in this example, it's pretty serious. And clearly the Mac App Store is somewhat of an obstacle for them.
I feel like they should at least prioritize. I mean, Opera is a corporation, or I mean, a company, a small company, and they should have at least a little bit of priority. For instance, if Google Chrome came to the Mac App Store, I don't think Google would even stay on there very long, because they release so many updates, and that update schedule would just be very disrupted.
Well, the thing with Google Chrome as a browser is that, you know, they took a very different approach to Firefox. You know, the updates happen in the background, and, you know, when you relaunch or when you reboot, the updates are applied, and it's a seamless experience for you.
It is.
Whereas, I mean, I've stopped using Firefox. In fact, the iMac that I'm using right now to talk to you, I don't even have Firefox installed. The reason being, it became such a huge piece of bloatware, and every time I fired it up to do something, it would say Firefox needs to make some updates, and I'd spend, you know, a good 2 minutes, you know, watching Firefox show me progress bars, download new stuff, and then want to relaunch. And that just interrupts your workflow.
Yeah.
I don't want an app telling me when I can or can't use it. I want to use it when I want to use it. And, you know, you can do your updates another time. I don't use Firefox anymore.
Firefox has been fired, truly.
By a lot of people. No one uses it anymore.
No. Should we talk, Jacob? I thought, because we should explain to listeners what happened with the proposed Friday episode that never happened. Basically, that was due to a few reasons, one of which was we were a little bit concerned about audio quality for the podcast. And I think we're all just very tired as well, unfortunately, when it came around to Friday. So we thought we'd approach it feeling fresher, give Jacob a little bit of time to ponder over his experience, perhaps. And we've all probably had a chance to read around Macworld a bit more as well since then. So do you want to share sort of your feelings now that you've been away from it for a little while?
Oh, sure. Well, really, I wrote an article on my personal blog about what I thought about it. And my overall thoughts were that it was nice to meet a lot of people. I met some great developers, Louis Mantia, some journalists, and just a lot of really nice people. But overall, I don't really think that it was worth going to the event. I don't think I'd go to it again because the expo floor, for instance, was supposed to be very exciting, and it was rather boring. Most of the apps just weren't that good. Some people were just over-pushing their product, and I wasn't as impressed with it as I was hoping to be, but it wasn't that bad.
It's funny you should say that because I've heard in other quarters that people who've been to the Macworld before weren't as impressed this year as previous years. And in fact, the scale of it's gone down a lot as well. There was a comment that the iOS lounge in CES was much bigger than the whole of Macworld.
And that was just weird.
Yeah, and that was just one tiny bit of CES. So as far as I understand, there was quite a lot of iOS apps being pushed, so it wasn't really that Mac focused.
Yeah, there was a whole section, what was it called? Appaloosa, I think is what they called it. And there were some Mac apps. 1Password, for instance, Smile mm-hmm. Software was there, and so on. But mostly iOS apps. But I think that's also a reflection of Apple's new focus on mobile. And, overall, Apple is trying to
just
focus more
on. Is it just not a focus on Apple's focus on mobile, but the fact that many more people out there will have one of Apple's mobile devices than will have one of their desktop devices. Mm. The iPad fondle slab and the iPhone are very desirable, and you'll find people who use Windows computers will go out and buy those as their phones.
Apple's
just not selling Macs in the same numbers as they sell their mobile devices, their portable devices.
Yeah, iOS devices are definitely more widespread. iPods in general, when they first came out, were much more widespread than a computer. It just seemed, because there were so many of them, they're so small, everybody had one in their pocket. So, but just the whole focus on apps is kind of different. And someone told me that actually it used to be in the north and south, or maybe it was north and west Moscone centers, and this time it's only in the west. And it, like when Apple was there, they used to have about 75,000 attendees, the person said, and now I don't know how many there were, but there were only about 600 press attendees there. So definitely it didn't feel crowded.
I mean, a lot of the photographs I saw, a lot of areas look quite, well, empty, really. There didn't look an awful lot of people floating around. May just be in the photos I saw, perhaps.
Yeah, I took some of the interior. It wasn't empty. I don't think it was empty. But, I mean, if an app's popular, you would expect like a line of 10-plus people waiting to check out the app and to talk to the developers.
You know what? It sounds like it could be my kind of show. Perhaps I'll go next year. I don't like places that are really crowded. You know, I like
going to leave London now.
I like room to move, you know, to be able to sit down somewhere. You know, I don't want it bumper to bumper with people.
Yeah. Put the kettle on. Let's have a chat. So what would you say with the... Did you get a sense of any sort of overriding theme for Macworld this year? Was there anything that like everyone was sort of focusing on?
Let's see. There were a lot of... Well, I'm sure it's like this in a lot of events. There were a lot of accessories. I mean, obviously, Apple wasn't there, so there were no computers or anything. A lot of accessories for iOS and Mac... devices, mostly iOS though, a ton of cases, even more screen protectors, and a lot of ugly skins. And,
Jacob, am I understanding it correctly? The show is sort of split into two, is Macworld and iWorld.
That's they renamed it. I don't know when though, maybe last year. It's Macworld/iWorld is what they call it.
Are they distinctly physically separate, or is it all kind of intermingled?
Well, I suppose like if you, I think it's everything's kind of mixed mash, and they put accessories in their own little area, kind of. But then accessories take up almost the whole floor, and then a lot of companies. It's just like they're all over the place. There's one here, one here, one here, one by an app, and but Appaloosa did have its own dedicated section, and it wasn't. It was, I'd say, about a quarter of the floor, maybe. It was a big section. And so there were a lot of little tiny booths for all the app developers and for people to talk to them and stuff. And then there were also, I got a lot of emails about cloud-based apps. Everyone's apparently wanting to go towards the cloud. Mm. And everyone's trying to make a solution, a better solution to Dropbox or to iCloud, one that they can make money off of. And that is apparently just better overall. There was one called MacMate, I think, which
I've seen MacMate advertised. I think MacMate started, or certainly previous advertising I saw from them, they wanted to become a replacement for MobileMe for people hosting their own iWebsites.
Yeah, that's what it is, because iWeb is gone pretty much. And
but then iWeb's not even in Lion or Mountain Lion, is it?
It's gone. Yeah, it's been gone for a while.
So aren't they backing the wrong horse?
I'm not sure. They say they have a solution to something. It's very similar to iDisk. So you would have that instead of a Dropbox folder, that virtual disk.
Terrible. This is the beauty of Dropbox. The fact that Dropbox works and people don't have to think about it. It's very easy to understand. One folder on your computer, anything you put in there will be synchronized with Dropbox and with any other computers on which you use your Dropbox account. It's very, very simple to understand, and that's why it works so well. iDisk was just an utter nightmare. I tried to transfer some files from my iMac at home to my iMac at work, a few hundred yards away, and it just never happened.
It sat there in this temporary area.
Some of the files transferred, but it never seemed to complete it. I mean, there was about, you know, how much space did you get with iDisk? I don't remember now.
Oh, 20 gigabytes, I believe.
20 gig sounds about right. I tried to transfer about 15 gig of data in one go, and it just went, not doing that, mate.
Yeah, that'll be why, probably because it was such a large volume in one go.
Well, mate, but the thing is, you can do it with Dropbox. I mean,
it should work.
It wasn't a single file. It was a number of files. That was just the total that I was trying to transfer in one go. And let's face it, you know, that's what people might typically do. And so it should be able to cope with it. And the fact
I've never really been in that into MobileMe at all. I never used it in its first days. It seemed kind of... I only wanted the @me.com email, and that seemed like a waste of $100 a year. So
the reason I went with MobileMe and I paid for it was so that I could have wireless syncing of my contacts and my calendars. It was worth it just for that.
But then Apple got sensible and they made it free.
Yeah.
Finally.
It makes much more sense it being free, I think. It means that many more people can use it, and it becomes a lot more useful, and it also ties people into the whole Mac and iOS way of doing things. If you make it easy for that, I mean, this is why I think a lot of people don't move from Mac to Android or Mac back to PCs. Of course, some do, but you know, it's very difficult to. There is a lot of work because, you know, once you set up with iTunes, and then if you go to iTunes Match, and the fact that you're synchronizing all your contacts wirelessly and your calendars and your reminders and your notes, and you know, suddenly it's all very easy. It works together, and to move, you've got to start messing about with Google or something. You know, I mean, if I was to do it, I wouldn't know where to start. Really, it would just be a nightmare, a mishmash of different services in order to achieve the things that just work on my Mac.
I tell you what, I can really demonstrate that as well, as if you change your iCloud password. My God, the number of different messages you start getting appearing left, right, and center. You know, one device is saying, ooh, sign in with this. And then, do you want to sync with this? Yes, no. And then you get it on your Mac, and then you get it on your iPhone. Oh, my God, you just don't realize how many times you've gone through all that already.
I think Apple did that to address security fears. This recent issue, some guy with a very short Twitter ID got hacked. The reason he got hacked was for his Twitter ID, and they were able to get access to his Apple ID. They wrecked it. They were able to get access to his Apple ID because they got the last four digits of his credit card from Amazon, and that's what they needed as security to get access to his .me.icloud thing. So I think they've introduced all those emails and notifications as a security measure to say, hey, this device has changed. You know, did you know? It's just that if you own a number of devices, you've got an iPad, you've got an iPhone, you've got a Mac, you're getting emails, as you say, Richard, left, right, and center.
I think the nice thing about Dropbox is that it's very focused. It's not like on iCloud, you've got that whole wide kind of, you've got your contact sync, you've got your calendar sync, you've got your mail, and then you've got storage for your documents and everything. It's all under one password.
Yeah.
With Dropbox, you're just storing files. I mean, people trust
I think that iCloud and Dropbox are answering two different questions, really. They're slightly different solutions. I mean, I use them both.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people will use both because they're doing different things.
I think these services, certainly Dropbox, they're at their best if they just disappear. If you notice that they're doing something, then they're not doing what you want, really. And I think that's what's good about Dropbox is it just disappears into the background.
Yeah, you don't have to think about it, do you? It's seamless.
No, you just drag it into the folder as if it was a normal folder and it's everywhere you want it to be.
Do you think you would, if you say had a 50 gigabyte account on Dropbox, would you synchronize your iTunes library with it?
No, because my iTunes library is too big and I currently have about 126 gigabytes with Dropbox.
Oh, I was just, wow, okay.
Of which I'm using just about 60%, I think. I pay for it, Jacob. It is so useful for me. I think
it is.
We spoke about this in an earlier podcast. The reason I don't have a portable Mac is because I've got an iMac at home, I've got an iMac at work, and I've got my head in the clouds and most of my data too. Stuff's in Dropbox. I find it so useful. I'm willing to pay for the extra space.
Yeah. Gives you more flexibility, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And it means I'm not carrying a piece of aluminium and glass between home and work all the time.
Take your iMac to the coffee shop. You know you want to.
Ah, that's what I got the iPad for.
No. You want that 20-something inch tablet, remember? That one's even better.
Yeah, that is good.
The Lenovo.
The Lenovo. Oh, it brings shame to that brand.
Come on, Richard. Get this podcast in some order.
No, I was just going to say we need to move along a little bit. Shall we move on to... it's worth just a quick mention about getting back again to the Mac App Store after we've slayed it a bit, that there's a new category created, Get Things Done, and it's week two of that. And there are some discounts going there. So if you need any getting things done type apps, Clear is one example that's in there. And there's calendar apps and to-do apps and that kind of stuff. There's some discounts going at the minute. So you may want to go and have a look at that before that ends.
Are the discounts any good, Richard?
I haven't looked at there are a couple of dollars, a couple of pounds.
This
off.
Is what annoys me about the App Store, actually, is, you know, with these special promotions or developers wanting to bump their apps up the popularity listings, they'll discount them. I remember paying an arm and a leg for Pixelmator, and now it seems to be on a permanent discount of about, you know, $20 or something, about £12.
Competitive.
Is it competitive? I mean, it seems to be, this app's going to be really useful. I'll buy it. I'll support the developer. I buy it. A few weeks later, it's on discount. And then I find it discount on some other promotion they're doing. And then it's a discount because it's this. And then, if you know, we get
the promotions
to Christmas
are nice.
And,
because, the thing with the promotions is, for a developer, they can email, say, the press, like me, and when I do a deals article, it gets mentioned. So it's pretty much free advertisement for them.
Yeah.
Easy for you to say.
Well, the other thing I think from what I understand from the developer's point of view is sometimes when they first start, it can be difficult for them to judge at what price point to put things out at.
So what they do is they jack up the price.
$50 or more.
Well, Pixelmator's, I think Pixelmator is worth more than they're selling it for most of the time, but I feel like I'm the only bugger who's paying full price, and then it's on discount the rest of the time.
It's like when you see the sales in the shops, isn't it? It's like, this item was previously available at a higher price in a basement in Brazil for 2 days.
Yeah.
So that was just a quick mention of that.
On the point of getting things done apps, yeah. I mean, you know, I've tried different things in the past. I've written about Wunderlist recently. Getting things done, maybe it's because I'm not very disciplined, but I find these things a bit of a distraction in the end, really. Sometimes a piece of paper and a pencil is easier to use.
I heard you scribbling earlier.
Yeah.
What's the app you use for that?
It's pencil app.
Pencil and paper and log.
That's the best
app.
You can do.
You buy the in-app purchase for paper.
Oh, I hear there's this new one. Let's see. I have one right here. It's a number two. I hear they're better than number ones.
Is that referring to the hardness of your lead?
No, it's a Ticonderoga. the salesman told me that two is better than one, and five is like you can't get anything better than that. So I'm really relying on this pencil to be my life.
Yeah, the salesman definitely would say that, wouldn't he?
I'm completely at loss.
I don't know what's going on either. Where are
Flame Staples?
Anyway, now, who put this in about OS 10.9? I'm interested in that.
That'll be me.
Go on, Johnny, tell us about that.
Apparently, OS 10, version 10.9, has been spotted in server logs since about October. And is becoming noticed increasingly so, leading to speculation that it will be released in coming weeks. Now, I think that last year, Mountain Lion was previewed in about March, and it took about 6 months to appear. So there's some speculation that we might be seeing 10.9 coming soon. I mean, we're only up to, on Mountain Lion, we're only up to 10.8.3, I think. Well, no.
There's also speculation. There's also speculation that we'll see a 6-inch iPhone soon. Yes, rumors.
Yeah, we don't do iOS, do we?
No,
no. That's what I hear.
So they think it might be called Lynx. 10.9 Lynx. The reason
Lynx?
For that,
why?
Lynx, well, apparently is trademarked along with Cougar and Tiger and so on, Leopard, back
in
2003.
It's L-Y-N-X, okay.
L-Y-N-X, yeah.
Okay,
but
I thought you meant Lynx.
A lynx isn't a big cat, is it? It's a fairly small cat.
Is it a pleasant-smelling cat?
Well, this is funny you should say that, because the article... you say that. Let's just explain to Jacob... in the UK, Lynx is the name for a brand of deodorant. And this Macworld article, I mean, this is some incisive insight from Macworld here, some excellent reporting. They actually finish off the article saying, however, Lynx is already a well-known brand name in the UK, famous for making deodorants. Well, that shows a clear misunderstanding of how trademarking works. If you register a trademark, you register it in different classes. So it's quite likely that a computer company will be able to use the word Lynx without infringing on the trademark of another company using the same name to promote deodorants. There is no conflict there. So, you know, this is... Whereas there is a conflict if Apple was to call their television device ITV, because in the UK there's a television company called ITV. So that's a clear conflict.
I heard about that, yeah.
Yeah, that's a clear conflict. Just because
Unless
somebody's...
they bought the rights or something.
Yeah, of course. But just because somebody's got a product, you know, a totally unrelated product, it's not even an electronics product. It's got no relation to the Mac. So,
no,
I mean...
Yeah,
you know, Macworld, you let yourself down there. That was an interesting article until the last line. You know,
that's something like you say, they can call it that. That's not a problem. But is it? Do you want to call it that in the UK?
Lynx.
Given that it is a deodorant,
it'll have a special name for UK.
Well, to be honest, Richard, you know, when I saw the word lynx, because I'm familiar with Max, I associated lynx as a cat, and going with a naming scheme that Apple's been using for a decade or more. I didn't think, that's that cheap stuff that teenagers spray under their arms.
Having said that, Tiger's a beer, isn't it? So, you know, if you're going down that path.
Yeah. And so, Cougar's an older woman that preys on young boys, isn't it? I don't know.
That's an American term, isn't it, Cougar?
I've no idea.
Cougar, yeah. That's informal.
I'm bored of this story anyway. Can we move on?
Johnny Spogan.
I think they'll name it Lynx over here, and then over there they'll name it Axe or whatever that stuff that American deodorant is. It'll be a competition.
I've totally lost it now.
Okay, let's move on.
What should we talk about?
Max would be a good start. It's a Mac podcast.
Yeah. Let's get back to...
I don't want to throw you off your stride, Richard.
No, I was just so in there, wasn't I? we're talking about Macworld and perhaps the shrinking of Macworld, it's probably interesting to talk about what's happening to the Mac Pro
continent, yeah,
and the Mac Pro in Europe. Johnny, could you want to tell us about what's going on with that?
Yeah, interestingly, Apple is going to stop selling the Mac Pro in Europe from the 1st of March. This is due to the Mac Pro in its current form falling foul of some sort of standard. It's called Amendment 1 of the regulation of IEC 6950-1, second edition, which has a kind of catchy ring to it.
Wow, it really does. It sounds like legalese right there.
Yeah, it's apparently, from what I've been reading, it's something to do with the wiring and the fan inside the device not conforming to some new regulations. Now, Tim Cook was saying last year in response to, you know, Mac heads getting a bit heated under the collar about the fact they hadn't seen a new Mac Pro for years apart from speed bumps. Tim Cook said, look, you know, hang on, we're going to have something new for you in 2013. So, you know, to my mind, it kind of makes sense that, you know, they can't sell the Mac Pro in its current form in the EU from the 1st of March. But if they've got another one coming in just a few months, there's no point really doing anything about this. No. They can still sell the Mac Pro in other markets. From what I understand, it's not a high volume machine anyway. It's very expensive and I think quite specialist. So if they've got something new coming, I think they've made the right decision.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense for them to keep it going, especially if they've got a new one in the pipeline. And it's, I think there's been a lot of rumours about it coming sort of April, May time anyway, hasn't there? So it wouldn't make any sense to them at all to do that. Unless their surprise is we've got something interesting in 2013 and it's we're going to kill the Mac Pro. There won't be one anymore.
Well, you know, you say that half joking, but the way Apple's been moving with its machines is less and less hardware customization or hardware replacement by the end user.
Yeah.
And the Mac Pro really exists as the only machine that people can probably get in there and tinker with.
Mm.
And then, you know, with the latest iMacs, they've gone to these skinny models that, apart from the 27-inch where you can upgrade the memory, replace the memory yourself, they're not user serviceable, really.
Mm.
And the Mac Pro, you know, are they going to want to move away from that? Are they going to want to lock down the hardware even more, make it more difficult for people?
Have you seen some of the people's imaginings of what the new Mac Pro could be? I saw an interesting one online because I was thinking about how could you make this newer or different, or, and one of the ideas was sort of like you would have slot-in cards that contained your processor with some units of RAM attached. So just by plugging them into the motherboard sort of thing, you would you know, instantly sort of upgrade the capability of the machine. I thought that was an interesting expansion idea. And you'd be locked into getting it from Apple because nobody else would be making it, certainly at the start anyway.
Mm-hmm. I hadn't seen that, but...
Yeah, it was an unusual design. I'd never come across that concept before. It'd be interesting to see what they do with it. It's got to be smaller, hasn't it, than the current one, because that's a monster.
It is. I don't really know where they can go with it, but, you know, it's quite easy to prove me wrong anyway.
It'd be interesting to see what they do. I mean, it's like you say, it's extremely niche market, and it wouldn't be beyond belief for them to drop it, I think.
Tim Cook says they've got something coming for Mac Pro users. They've got something coming this year. I mean, it's a surprise.
It's called the iMac.
The iMac Pro.
Yeah, you never know. It could be. Slightly fatter iMac with more beef in it.
Oh, yeah. It's making a bigger one is the solution.
Expansion options or something like that, yeah. No, they need it to be modular, don't they, for the kind of stuff those guys do. But anyway, that's enough of that. But I thought it was an interesting thing to hear the death knell of the Mac Pro in Europe.
Maybe only temporary.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's like you say, it's temporary. Shall we talk about... it's not really much to talk about, but it was just a heads up that there was an interesting article over on Cult of Mac that I was interested in. It's all about mastering the Option key on your Mac. And it goes through quite a lot of things, actually, that you can do with it, and lots of screenshots as well to show you in lots of Apple's own applications. Do you use many of these at all, guys? I'm not familiar with that many of them, actually.
It's always worth having a stab at it, you know, with whatever you're doing, because it can bring up more information. For example, if you use the Option key in conjunction with some of the icons on the menu bar on the top right of the screen. So, for example, you click on the Wi-Fi icon, and you have extra information about Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
If you click on the sound, then it gives you additional information. Rather than just giving you the volume control, you can select the input and output devices.
That's been extraordinarily handy to know that since we've started podcasting, for quickly switching between your inputs and outputs, isn't it?
That's right.
So you know what I do?
Yeah, go on.
With the Option key, my favorite thing is, I believe, that's the one it is. I actually learned this, there was a tip on Twitter or something. You can do Option, Shift, and then press the volume buttons, and it does little increments instead of like a full bar. It does, I think, one, two,
three, it does quarters.
Four. It's fourths, or quarters, yeah.
Interesting.
It's rather interesting, yeah. If you're just annoyed with it being a little bit too high, you just turn it down.
Yeah. So, Option,
but you can also show the library in Finder. If you click Go and you hold the Option key, the library button pops up, and then that's an easier way than showing the whole file or the whole folder.
I've got a feeling as well, you know, I was reading through this, and do you remember, Johnny, you probably remember, I posted on Twitter, and I think Neil Cochran did as well, when he accidentally opened every single song that I had as a folder. And I think that's actually it's actually in this article what he actually hit. I can't remember where I saw it, but I read it and I went, I'm sure that's what he's done by accident. Full disclosure, I think it was. Option click, and it opens everything within that triangle. So I think that's what he might have done.
What we should say is that anybody who's listening to this podcast and looking at their keyboard, looking for the Option key to stab, the Option key on modern Mac keyboards is marked as Alt, and you have two of them either side of the command keys, which in turn are either side of the space bar. The Alt key is marked, the Option key is marked Alt and has a little frying pan symbol.
What?
It does on my keyboard, little frying pan.
A frying pan.
It looks like a frying pan to me.
In other words, do not touch this button or you will harm your computer. No, I have a MacBook, the latest MacBook Air, and it says Alt on the top in a little bit of a smaller font and then Option on the bottom.
Now, isn't that interesting? Because that's not what we have.
Oh, dear.
But then it's back to the situation when we're having a roundup of last year and the Mac App Store, and we're getting presented with different recommended apps to the ones that Jacob was getting presented with.
Why would they give us different...
Life across the pond, my friend.
Why would they give us some obtuse hieroglyphic and they actually get the word option?
You really must take a picture of this.
Yeah, absolutely. We will do. That
does look like a frying pan to me.
Deep fat fryer,
like
Johnny.
Pan. Really? Wow. That is very strange.
I'll take a photo of it and put it on Twitter at the end of the podcast.
Good plan. All right. I believe, since we should move on, the next topic's mine anyway. Clean My Mac 2. I checked it out at the Macworld event, and they just showed off some of the new features that are going to be in it. I believe it releases February. Oh, so this month. And it's going to have iPhoto cleanup, which erases duplicates and other like little files that you don't need, extra info files in your iPhoto library, which is very handy for some people who import their iPhone photos like 10 times. Mm-hmm. And then large and old file, it brings up, what is it? I think like a list of old files and large files that you haven't used in a long time, and then it asks you if you'd like to remove them. So it's pretty nice. And then it also empties hidden trashes, and I don't actually know how that works. I haven't gotten there yet, but it sounds interesting. And there's an uninstaller, and you can uninstall extensions as well. And there's a complete eraser, which pretty much shreds files much faster than... Like, you can put them in your trash, but this will secure delete them nicely. It's just an easy way to do that. And the best part of the whole thing is the redesigned user interface. It is so beautiful. Oh, my goodness. It's like there's a sidebar, one nice button at the bottom that just says clean, and it says scan before you scan it. And it's just, it's beautiful. It looks great. I'm very excited for the release.
Now, I'm presuming that this is a piece of software that you're not going to be able to get in the Mac App Store.
No. Oh, actually, yeah. Yeah. Because I think it accesses certain folders and things. Like, it goes too deep into the actual file system for Apple to allow it, I assume.
So what's the developer's website?
Their name is MacPaw. It's MacPaw.com.
MacPaw, right.
Perfect for Apple because, you know, paws. Lots of paws in their operating systems.
Yeah, true.
Mine pauses a lot. What? Spinning Beach Ball of Doom.
I didn't hit that button. I don't know what you're talking about. I'll press play again and I'll make sure it works for you.
I've been using one not that similar, but a similar sort of function in terms of being able to clean up your usage of your disk, a nice app called Disk Daisy. I think you've had a look
at this. I've heard of that.
I've been using Daisy Disk.
Daisy Disk, is that it? Yeah, Daisy Disk. Yeah, Disk Daisy, you know, whatever. so it's really nice the way that it visualizes what's on your disk. It presents it in terms of sort of concentric circles, with the middle section being the biggest file area and the major folders, if you like, working out to increasingly more obscure and smaller files as you go, and they're color coded, and the color code is down the right hand side, if I remember rightly, telling you what the breakdown is.
It is a very visually appealing and easy to understand app from that graphic that it gives you, but it does have one drawback, and it's when you have a list of your disks, it has a bar, and that bar will be filled to a greater or lesser extent depending upon how much data you have on that particular disk. So, for example, if your disk is only a third full, the bar, the coloured area of the bar, will only go one third of the way along.
Mm-hmm.
but the number that it has in gigabytes is, I think, the space left. Or is it the other way around? I can't remember. But anyway, it's confusing. I would expect the number to be telling me what the bar is representing. So if it's taking up 33% of the disk, I'd expect it to be telling me 330 gigabytes.
I think it tells you how much you've got free, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And as your disk fills up, you know, it gets a little more confusing. So if you've got about 55% disk usage and it's telling you 45%, the way your brain looks at it, you see the bar, and the bar's a little bit bigger and the number's a bit smaller, and you're going, it does not compute. I find it a little difficult to understand, a little misleading.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's an issue. But I'm not going to write to them about it. Of course, I've got time.
Well, it's just another nice little one to have a look at if you're looking for some software to
it is a good
clean
piece
up your
software.
Mac. So, finally, I think we'll move on to our hot hardware section, and seeing as Jacob's been surrounded by it, we thought we'd ask him to tell us what he thought the most interesting bit of kit was that he saw at Macworld. Do you want to talk about that, sure. Jacob?
Yeah. So there were actually a few different cool things, but the only one that actually stuck with me was Goal Zero's solar recharging kit. It's pricey, very pricey, like $300 to $500. So
wow, I've just seen the prices.
MacBook.
It is pricey.
Yeah, isn't it?
But
I'm pleased I'm sitting down.
But the thing is, it's really cool. They had a few demo models of it, but you obviously can't use it because you're indoors and sunlight's not that good yet. So it kind of it's just a solar panel. I believe it has a power pack, and it stores the power in there. And then it's kind of like a battery, and it charges that battery, and that battery charges your computer. So it just looked really cool. I've always waited for one of those. I waited for a solar power laptop for a long time, and there still isn't one. Wired Magazine had this awesome article like 3 or 4 years back, and I was inspired, and I thought, I want to build one of those. But obviously, I didn't. But Goal Zero's solution, it's really interesting. They've got small ones, medium, or ones for small devices, medium devices, and large. And the medium devices are more MacBooks. Large devices, you can actually power a TV. So you want to go camping and bring that football game with you. Please don't do that. But, you know, if you must, it's about $1,000.
Surely the whole point of going camping is that you're not watching television.
Yeah, well, I know people who go and play video games. So,
putting it into context, from what I'm looking at on the website here, Jacob, the faster charge kit, it's $500, less 5 cents. Kit includes briefcase solar panel to collect power, large power pack, £12 to store power. Now, translating that into something I understand, I think that's about 5.5 kilos. Mm. 30 watts of solar power, recharge your power pack quickly, designed for your MacBook, perhaps. What's this? 5 to 10 hours will recharge the power pack from the sun. So you've got to stick it out in there. I can see an immediate drawback to this.
What is it?
We don't get any sun in the UK.
I was waiting for you to say that, Johnny.
I forgot about that. Well, you know, now we can move on.
But, okay, $500 and you got a briefcase power pack weighing 5.5 kilos, £12.
It looks rather nifty. You open it up and you've got your dual solar panels. You're like, yes, that's right. I have power out here.
Yeah.
Who wants to carry around a 5 kilo battery with them?
I don't, but I just think the idea is nice. I think it's nice that someone actually went far enough to actually develop this idea.
Rather expensive for what it is, though, don't you think?
Depends. Well, if they're like the first ones to do it, which they're not, then they could set the industry standard. But it just depends on the competition, I suppose. It's like with a car or a computer. It depends on the competition. And you never know. They may want to be like Apple. Very expensive product. oh well if you don't want to buy it.
Yeah, I mean, with the way that laptops have been moving, I remember a previous job I had. I had a Toshiba Tekra. I can't remember what model number, T500, I think. It was this massive grey plastic thing that I think weighed about 3 kilos. And it really was a heavy weight when you're carrying it around in the bag. And now we have these beautiful computers that Apple has introduced just 5 years ago, these MacBook Airs that, you know, weigh next to nothing in comparison. And this company is now coming up with something to weigh us down. I suppose if you're a road warrior and you need power all the time, then maybe, well, I don't know, will it suit a road warrior if you're driving along in your car? Where are you going to stick your solar panels? It's going to fill up the windscreen.
You can charge it in your car.
I'm sure people would find uses for it. If you travel a lot, maybe. If you spend a lot of time in not rural, but pretty much the middle of nowhere, there are probably a lot of practical uses for it, but
I'm sure they will find a market for it. I'm sure there are uses for it. I can't really see myself sitting outside in the sunlight, you know, with the solar panels out, with my MacBook plugged in, charging up, because you won't be able to see your MacBook screen because it's a glossy screen and it'll be reflecting all the light. So you can't work outside with it, notwithstanding the fact that I don't have the solar panels and I don't have a MacBook and there hasn't been any sunlight until today.
I just can't imagine us sitting in the sunlight, Johnny.
I tell you what, if anybody's got a beach in the Caribbean with a MacBook and one of these solar panels, I'll be willing to fly over and try it out, see if it works.
I have a better idea. I think we should just move there and use it for our main source of power, and we should blog about it and do our podcast using that power. It would be fantastic. It could be our sponsor.
It could be an incredibly eco-friendly podcast and blog.
Very eco-friendly, yes.
We'll just forget about the plane flight over for me and Johnny.
Okay, so three kits. A fast charge kit, which looks like one solar panel, a faster charge kit, which is your briefcase one that I was talking about, two solar panels, and the lightest weight kit, a small solar panel, which is even more expensive. Okay, well, what do you think?
Who's going first?
Oh, the confusion. I still think it was the coolest thing there, because everything else, I mean, I don't want to mention a bunch of apps for iOS or iOS covers or any of that nonsense. So I would say it was the coolest thing there, besides maybe Blue Microphone had a newer microphone, but, you know, it wasn't really that cool. It wasn't that unique.
I'm looking at this. I'm sure there are some uses for it. I just don't know immediately what they are at the moment. It's not something that I'd ever need, really. Of course, other people might, but those prices are pretty steep for what it is, I think. I mean, I don't know how much solar panels cost, but they're sticking them up on all the houses around here at the moment, so they can't be that expensive. Just because you're plugging it into a shiny piece of glass and aluminium, they think they can stick a premium on it, perhaps. I don't know.
Over here, actually, the government subsidizes, I think, 50%, 20 or 30% maybe, if you put in solar panels, they'll actually pay you for them, which is nice.
In terms of this Gold Zero stuff, my vote is not, really.
Okay.
Yeah, not for me as well. I think it's too expensive. It looks bulky and cumbersome. I'm not clear who they're marketing to.
I will say this to Goal Zero: if they can guarantee me some long-term sunshine in the United Kingdom, then I'm more than willing to try their kit and change my view. But they'll need to guarantee the sunshine.
Or they can send us a review kit. I'd be quite happy to try it out.
What, with your horizontal snow?
Yeah. if we can work through that, then it'll definitely get a hot.
Okay, so it's a not from me. It's a not from Richard. It's a bit academic now. Jacob?
I still like it. I don't think it's a hot product, though. So, not just because.
That's really kind of disappointing that's the best thing that you felt. Now, I'm not knocking you, Jake. If that's the only thing that you saw that you thought, wow, this is cool.
Oh, no, there were other things, but most were for iOS. That was the problem.
That's what I mean. For Mac, that's the best thing that you saw. That just kind of shows how much the focus is shifting, doesn't it?
Yeah.
To be fair, we did look at some crappy little iPhone dock that you stuck on the base of your iMac the other week.
Oh,
which
dear.
Which you two liked.
You betrayed us. Well, we could switch the topic again. I think this is good closing news, kind of. Skyfall is now available as a digital copy on iTunes. It releases on the 12th, so it's available a week early for $14.99 in the US in HD. And I don't know about over there, but...
I'm sure it'll be different over here.
£14.99. Yay.
Probably will. Richard, before you wrap the show up, I'd just like to do a couple of name checks. So I want to say thank you to Steve Moore, who is at SBBrit on Twitter, who said we were a bit grumpy. I think that's what he said anyway. what he said was, been listening to at BTTM podcast. I have a feeling this is going to turn into the grumpy old guys talking Mac that we loved Bagel Tech for. I think I'm assured that was a compliment. So thanks to Steve. I also want to say thanks to Neil Cochran, who's at NeilCochran1, Lynn Murphy, who is at MurphWiz, and Jose, who's Mr. Jose Reyes, for their reviews in the iTunes store. I've been banging on about this for a couple of episodes recently, and clearly they're sick of me talking about it now, so they actually went and put some reviews in the store. So thanks very much to Neil, Leon, and Jose for that. And I've had contact from Adam Kenny today, who's at ThoughtMash on Twitter, who claims that he's our fifth listener and that he's laughing along with me, and he assures not at me. Thanks, Adam.
That's cool.
We've got five listeners, guys.
I'm glad we got the reviews. Do you know what? Skyfall's not even in the iTunes store in the UK, as far as I can see.
Well, that's ridiculous. It was made in the UK, or it's a British film. I know that.
Well, that's just typical, isn't it, really?
It came out over there in the cinema first, I think.
You get the soundtrack and everything, but there's not a link to the film. It's a shame.
I did just see the Frying Pan Key tweet, and... that's actually this is an interesting thing. If you go to any menu and the option key's there, I never knew what it was, but that's the option key's symbol. So it's a bit logical that they would actually put it on there. I don't know why they wouldn't do that on American ones. Maybe symbols are too advanced for us.
Since you guys are
Egyptians.
Yeah, we can all read hieroglyphics over here.
Jacob, before Richard wraps it up, tell me, on the American keyboard, above the number 3, what symbol do you have?
I have the expose symbol. It's three
rectangles. No,
rectangles.
Not the key. Not on the key above. Not F3. On the number
pound.
3 key. So
pound,
when you say so pound, you mean hash.
I mean tic-tac-toe.
You mean what?
Kidding. You don't know what tic-tac-toe is?
Oh, noughts and crosses, man. It's noughts and crosses.
Oh, it's not. That's such a lie. Over here, we call it tic-tac-toe.
It's over here, Jacob, we call it tic-tac-toe. It's just you Americans speak so quickly, don't you? I find it difficult. You tic-tac-toe. What? Noughts and crosses, man.
Is that what you have then?
We've got the pound symbol, but if we say pound to you, you think of the two parallel lines and the two parallel lines going the other way.
Wait, so that's on the third? Oh, that's weird. So we have...
You have what you know as the pound, which we know as the hash, and we have the pound symbol, which is our currency
British
symbol.
British sterling,
yeah.
You have on 4 then?
We've got the dollar sign.
That's weird, so you have both.
We've got the euro sign as well, haven't we, Johnny?
Yeah.
Where?
If you on the number two key, You have to press. No, it is an at. It's also the euro symbol as well.
Oh, do you get that with the option key, the frying pan? is that how you get the euro?
Oh, I can get trademark if I hold option and then press the 2 key. And then if I do option shift and 2, then I get euro.
Yeah. So look what we do.
But I can't find the pound anywhere.
We just have to do option 2 to get the euro.
I tell you what, guys, this is making thrilling listening for the listener. Different
the
key combinations in
British
Mac OS
and American 10. Keys. Mm.
So to our 5 listeners listening at home, if you want to get your keyboards out and try these different key combinations and play, what's that game where you Twister? Play Twister on your keyboard.
Oh, dear Lord.
Yeah. Anyway, out of the frying pan into the fire. Richard, wrap it up, please.
Yeah, it's over. Where can we find you?
Who first?
Johnny.
About.me/JohnWinter. I'm on Twitter at Johnny_Winter. Twitterize me.
I'm thepapermail.com and at Pinderworth on Twitter.
And it's well worth, I'd like to say it's well worth having a read of Jacob's post on Macworld. It was a nicely written piece. I can be found at Rich Harkness on Twitter or my blog, areyougettingit.co.uk. Thanks very much for listening, everyone, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
And Richard, before you go, it really would be a good idea if we got a Twitter ID for this show.
It would be, and as it happens, we already have done, and I'm sure our listeners are already following it. There you go. It's at BTTM Podcast.
Excellent.
So there you go. Thanks very much for listening, everyone.
Thank you for listening to episode 8 of Back to the Mac from the Q Broadcasting Network. You can find us at Q.am, that's Q-U-E.am, or on Twitter at Q Broadcasting. Intro and outro music is used with the kind permission of Tariq Greenfield, composer and producer. You can follow Back to the Mac podcast on Twitter at BTTM Podcast.
Macintosh.
I'm back now. Sorry, I just had to say goodbye to my Czech blonde.
Hello and welcome to Back to the Mac, show number 8, the Mac show about Macs for Mac lovers. And I've just screwed that up totally. There you go.
Yeah, there were too many pauses and and.
Would you like to start that again, Richard?
I'll have another go, yeah.